a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
All right. After an almost 2 week hiatus, I think we deserve it, Jeremiah. Just it's not a hiatus from work.
It is the off season, right?
Yeah, it is. It is just almost a 2 week hiatus. I did a little short 6 minute podcast saying, "Here's what's coming up on the Jazz Notes podcast in the next few weeks," and we are back. My name's Cleon Wall.
Sweet.
Jeremiah Jensen joining me here. I know it's the throes of college football season, but the Jazz, you know, they're going to be starting up here pretty soon. So let's get to talking about them, or at least some of the guys who play for the Utah Jazz. And mainly what I'm talking about is Team USA. Let's at least focus on Donovan Mitchell first. I know that there are Jazz men playing for other teams. We're going to talk about them too, but let's at least talk about Donovan Mitchell and Team USA first. Donovan didn't look good today. Only
no.
3 of 12 from the field, but Team USA pulls out one in overtime over Turkey. And you could say, really, the reason why that they're still in this thing is because of Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, well, he late in the game, so there's time running out. Chris Middleton attempts a three. It's off the mark. They're down by two, by the way, as seconds are ticking off. And then Donovan skies high for an offensive rebound, kicks it out to Jason Tatum, who's fouled taking a three-pointer, and that three-pointer led to 2 for 3 from the free-throw line and allowed the U.S. to tie the game in regulation, send it to overtime where Chris Middleton's 2 free throws won it. But Donovan did not have the day that he wanted to have offensively, but he still found a way late in the game to impact the game. And also, the first game they played, 16 points to lead the team. So I thought he was pretty good in that first game. I think this is going to be up and down, especially in group play with the United States team. I think they're still trying to understand how to play with each other. Remember, these national teams play together for a long time, and this U.S. team is kind of put together in a way, honestly, at the last minute with so many guys dropping out. They didn't really know who they were going to have. So they're having a hard time, I think, I guess, meshing quickly, which is natural. And these other teams haven't had to worry about that. And Turkey was a team with NBA guys on it that played really well. Chetty Osman from the Cleveland Cavaliers, Ersan Ilyasova, the Bucks. I mean, these are guys that have played in the league for quite a while and have had success. So Turkey was no slouch, and they proved it today and gave the U.S. all they had. But, you know, there's going to be some inconsistency with not just Donovan, but all the players on the team as they try to figure this all out.
I think that's why you shouldn't panic if you're a Team USA guy. And more even than that, if the USA doesn't win, the USA doesn't win. I mean, it'd be nice if they did, but I think we see the reality of it all. You know, the team that they have. If they do win, good for them. Some teams like Turkey and other teams are also missing NBA players. So I'm not saying it's not a big deal. I just look at this as more of a learning experience for all the guys who are on the team. Yes, I know that you have a guy like Kemba Walker who wants to lead his team to something meaningful, something he hasn't done in a long time, especially playing with the Charlotte Hornets. But I look at this as kind of a learning experience for all the young guys because there are so many young guys on this team. So I don't know. I mean, I was a little shocked it came down to that type of a game. Maybe with some missed free throws by Turkey in the end. But
that too, four in a row.
Yeah. Other than that, though, I guess it's not that I don't care. I'm just kind of an interested observer. And maybe it's because I'm interested to see how Donovan does. And more important than that, we heard what Greg Popovich said before this whole thing even started. He anointed Donovan as the default leader on this team. A guy who's going to be coming into his third year in the NBA, and he's basically saying, you're our leader. Your leader is not always going to have the best game, but he's going to do whatever it is to win. And he made the play today to put Team USA into a position to end up winning that game. So that's what you want to see from these guys. And I'm sure he's learning from it, too, and Greg Popovich is learning from it, too. If there's one good thing, his three makes were all three-pointers, so you got that going for you.
Absolutely.
And you learn from it, and you play Japan in a few days. So I don't know. I guess in group play here, and maybe just in this tournament overall, this World Cup tournament, I'm just more of an interested observer, and I'm not going to be surprised if another team wins this thing.
Yeah, no, you're seeing a lot of good play, and I guess we can transition into Joe Ingles. I'm looking at that Australian team, and I'm like, that's a good basketball team. And Joe Ingles has been the star of that team, which if you're a Jazz fan and you're watching Joe Ingles nearly get the first triple-double in World Cup history today, you're like, oh, wow, Joe's even getting better at age 30. I mean, it's crazy. Joe, obviously, I think the international game really suits him. And their team has a guy like Andrew Bogut and Aaron Baines, like centers that are really good with passing the ball, really skilled big men. And it's fun watching them play the game of basketball and the passing and the movement that they have. And Joe can bring that and all these experiences to the Jazz team this year. And I see it's crazy, but I'm seeing Joe getting better, a better playmaker, better shooter. That's also intriguing and also exciting for Jazz fans that one of the biggest stars in the World Cup so far is on your team. It's Joe Ingles.
And I think on top of that, we already know how unselfish Joe is, and I guess we're just kind of seeing that more and more. But adding to that, Joe's one of those guys that he needed stars around him. And he was kind of asked to do something that he's not used to doing when playing for the Jazz the past couple of seasons. Losing Gordon Hayward, you know, kind of made a difference, and gaining Donovan Mitchell, but he kind of needs more than just the one star. And so to be able to get Mike Conley and also Bojan Bogdanovic, I think you're going to see Joe a lot more comfortable this season. Whether he starts or comes off the bench, I think you're going to see him more comfortable because he's going to be one of the facilitators. He's going to be one of those guys that opposing teams may forget about a little bit, which is going to make Joe even better because I think, you know, once he's left alone because they're focusing on other guys, I think he's going to really benefit coming up this next Utah Jazz season. Then you have Rudy Gobert, too. He had a great game, 16 points, 13 rebounds, 2 blocks, 6-for-6 from the line for him, and also a pretty good game against Germany, too. So good to see the Jazz players, at least, you know, guys like Joe and Rudy coming out big in this World Cup. And these guys are proud. They want to go out and win this thing. They want to beat Team USA.
Everybody does. Team USA has a target on their back, and a team like France and a team like Australia has the talent to believe that they can go out there and win it.
So if I'm a Team USA guy, I mean, just to tell the Team USA guys and Donovan Mitchell fans out there, don't panic. It's okay. It's fine if you struggle.
We're just so used to Team USA basketball going out and just destroying opponents. And so it's kind of weird to see them struggle and have to squeak out a win over a team like Turkey. It's all.
Yeah, I understand that. I know that they want world domination. Again, the same thing happened a few years ago after the Dream Team, and they had a couple of teams in there way after the Dream Team that just didn't live up to expectations. And then things kind of they were awakened, and the Giant came out, and now we're kind of in that lull again, and it's okay. I still think that this experience for Donovan Mitchell is going to be amazing, and I'm not even talking about Team USA in the future. I think it's going to be amazing for him coming into the team next year because they already rely on him a lot, and now, I mean, he's already a leader on this team. Now he's a leader of other guys, too. I think it's just going to do him a tremendous amount of good being part of Team USA.
I agree.
All right, then. So the other reason we wanted to get together is that in the next 5 weeks, not only are we going to be featuring different teams, we're going to be doing something called the 10-5-5. I'm going to be interviewing 10 guys about 10 teams from the Western Conference in the next 5 weeks, getting us ready for the preseason. It's all going to be Western Conference teams, because not that I don't like the Eastern Conference teams, but that's who the Jazz are going to be playing against. Not only are we going to be talking about that in the next few weeks, we're also going to be giving our top 5 guys at each position all time in Utah Jazz lore. Maybe it's dealing with the fact that the Jazz have now been here for 40 years. Let's give our top five point guards. Now, I'm going to set some rules forward. I don't know if I did not tell Jeremiah this before.
Oh, there's rules. There's going to be. I was excited for this. Now I'm worried.
No. Nothing to be worried about. The rules are you had to be at least a member of the Utah Jazz for at least two seasons.
Oh.
Are we still okay with that?
You've eliminated two guys I was considering.
Okay. Because I did not tell Jeremiah the rules beforehand, I'm still going to let him put his players in. It's okay.
It's okay.
And they also have to predominantly play that position. Meaning, we're going to be talking about the top five point guards of all time today. And that means that these guys predominantly played the point guard position. It's not, I don't want to put, and I saw one list, I just went on the internet, I'm like, Jazz point guards, all-time Jazz point guards, and someone put out a list. And I think number three or four on there was Jeff Hornacek. And I'm like,
not a point guard.
Yes, he played point a little bit in Phoenix, and he probably played point a lot here in Utah. But that wasn't his position. He was a shooting guard.
Right.
So the top five point guards at all time, you can let us know your top five point guards. You can tweet me at KSL Cleon, or you can tweet Jeremiah Jensen. What's your Twitter handle again, Jeremiah?
At JJ Sportsby.
All right. So you can tweet us and let us know who your top five point guards are. I think number one's unanimous. This one's not a difficult thing.
Yeah.
If
you say anything other than John Stockton, you're never allowed on this podcast again. How's that?
that's probably true. Well, I was really... No, I'm just kidding with you. John Stockton. Stockton, clearly the standard for Utah Jazz point guards right now. Hall of Famer, all-time leader in assists. I'm talking about all-time NBA leader in assists, not just the Jazz. 19 seasons. He was the one guy that you could always trust to seemingly do the right thing on the floor. He didn't have to look to Jerry Sloan a lot. He wasn't a starter when he first came into the league. Ricky Green was the guy, but it just took him a couple of seasons, and he was a starter for the Utah Jazz. He is definitely number one. I don't know what else you can say about him. He was the best, the standard bearer for Utah Jazz when it comes to point guard position.
Yeah, I really don't know that there's anything I can say to argue with it. There's really nothing I can add that anybody listening to this has never heard before or doesn't know. John Stockton is one of the greatest point guards in NBA history, and it's not even close. He's the greatest point guard in Jazz history, and outside of Karl Malone, I mean, who left a bigger mark? And you could even argue that he did. It's kind of, I guess, it's Stockton to Malone, right? So, yeah, John Stockton in a landslide, number one. No one else even comes close. And there's some really, really good players in this top five list.
Yes, exactly. All right, number two, for some Jazz fans, I'm not gonna say it's a controversial pick, because it's really not. Because when you just look at what he did on the floor, I think it's obvious. This is my number two pick. I'm going to say Darren Williams.
Really?
I'm going to say Darren
Williams. We are now at a point where we can argue.
Okay. I'm going to say Darren Williams, and I'm going to say that physically, he was one of the better point guards the Utah Jazz have had. Statistically, he was one of the better point guards the Jazz had. He took over as the starter in his rookie season. He led the team to the playoffs and actually the Western Conference Finals in his second season. If you go and look at his stats each season, second season, 16 points, 9 assists. Third season, 19 points, 11 assists. 19-11 fourth season, 19-11 fifth season. And then before he got traded... and that's probably the big controversy right there. If I'm just going to go on the floor, before he got traded, he was averaging 21-10 his final season before he left to go play for the New Jersey Nets because the Jazz traded him away. And that's when Jerry Sloan also retired because of, well, let's just say it was because those two headbutted and it didn't work out well for the two of them. But I think far and away, though he didn't play, he played six seasons for the Jazz. I think far and away, or at least most of six seasons for the Jazz, far and away, I think he is the second best point guard. And I really don't think there's any competition, but I guess there is, according to Jeremiah.
I'm going to bring up the competition, and his number hangs from the rafters at Vivint Arena. He's one of two point guards who have their numbers retired in Jazz history. His name is Pistol Pete Maravich.
Oh, that was the third thing I wanted to talk to you about. But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, that's against the rules?
No, well, I was going to say only Utah Jazz players, but that's okay.
His number's in the rafters.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead. Pistol Pete. Okay, I'm fine with
that. History.
Go ahead.
He did play 17 games in a Utah Jazz uniform. So that's who I'm going to go with, number two. And like you said, if you only wanted to count Utah Jazz, then he's eliminated, I guess, technically.
But it's okay. But we'll go with New Orleans Jazz players, too.
So I'm going to go Pete Maravich, number two. But it's actually close. That's how much reverence I have for what Darren Williams accomplished here. He's a two-time All-Star, And during that time period, when he was in his prime with Utah Jazz, you can make an argument that he was the best point guard in the NBA during that time, which is a big claim. But he was right there. And we were having the debate, and it was a legitimate debate, Chris Paul or Deron Williams, and he was winning that argument for a couple seasons. Obviously, he didn't have the longevity that Chris Paul had. And then you have all these point guards coming up soon after that were just fantastic. But it's close in my mind. Pistol Pete also had injury issues, and he kind of fell off pretty quickly as well. But when he was with the New Orleans Jazz, he was multiple All-Star. He was one of the best, most flashy players in the league. Incredible gifted scorer, passer, all those things. So I'm going Pistol Pete number two, and so I guess I just gave my number three, which is Deron Williams.
Okay.
But that's my two and my three, so I'm going to go Pistol number two, Deron number three.
The only reason I would pick, let's say I included Pistol Pete, because I did not include Pistol Pete, and that's fine, but let's say I include Pistol Pete. I think the one thing that you would say goes against Pistol Pete, and maybe this is not completely his fault, he was a very flashy player, but I'm not sure how much of a team player he really was, and his team did not win a lot while he was in the NBA. Maybe that's a little bit of his fault. Maybe that's a little bit of the team's fault, because the New Orleans Jazz were kind of a train wreck when he also played for them.
Absolutely.
So I'm not sure you can argue.
Well, the Hawks weren't good when he was there either. That's a fair point.
All right. Number three, Deron, anything else you want to add with Deron Williams?
No. I mean, we all know what Deron did, and it didn't end the way we wanted, that everybody wanted it to, especially Deron. And I think that there's been some fences mended since then between him and Jerry a bit. But it's a shame that it didn't end in a better way, because he is one of the greats in Jazz history. And, had he not had that incident, even with the numbers he has now, you could consider retiring his jersey as a Jazz player. If you look at what he did, statistically, it's right up there with all the greats in franchise history, right behind John Stockton with a lot of the things he did. So it's unfortunate the way that Deron is remembered based on how good he was as a player here during his time. That whole era of Jazz basketball is underappreciated. Andre Kirilenko underappreciated, Memo, Carlos Boozer. That whole run that they had, I feel, is underappreciated because they were following John Stockton and Karl Malone. The standard was really high, and I don't think that any of those players really met the expectations that fans had for them. And which is crazy, because some of those guys reached All-Star game. All of them did. Andre, Memo, Boozer, Williams all played in All-Star games as Jazz players. But how many of us have still loved those players and consider them the all-time greats? How many of those players have their number retired? None of them. So it's kind of interesting how Jazz fans reflect on that era. There are some fans that do love it and do remember it, but most people are just like, it just wasn't the same as the John Stockton, Karl Malone era, and so it's judged differently.
My number three is, I'm going to go back to the mid-80s, before John Stockton came, and that's Ricky Green. I'm going to name him number three on my list. Really, his best seasons were with the Utah Jazz. He was a one-man fast break. He was lightning fast, but he also was not as good as Stockton was, I think, at running the team, but I think good enough when you think about the cast of characters he had. And you think about that 82, his best season was 82-83, I think, and that was that kind of beloved Jazz team from the 80s that finally kind of broke into the playoffs, and it was just
83-84 season.
Oh, I'm sorry, 83-84. So it was the year after. He
was an All-Star in 83-84. Yep.
82-83 is his best statistical season, but you think about that team with Mark Eaton, you had Adrian Dantley on that team, you had Daryl Griffith on that team. It was kind of that team that finally grew up and became who we were hoping that they would be, even though we knew during that time period, it's like, well, you got the Lakers and Celtics. How are they going to compete with these guys? But it was still fun. And I would probably say that he's my number three point guard. And maybe it's just because I have a fondness for him. I was a kid growing up and watching those Jazz teams. And even though I like Stockton better than Green, I just had a reverence for Green for being able to take the team to where they were able to go. Probably his biggest weakness, he couldn't shoot the three, but not a lot of guys were shooting threes back then anyway. So, but he did a lot of good things for this Jazz team. It just took a Hall of Famer to finally beat him out.
Hot Rod called him the fastest of them all. And if you watch old highlights of Ricky Green, you see why. He was so fast. He was great at stealing the basketball. He's a terrific defender. Got the ball up and down the court. The Jazz scored in the high, like around, they averaged like 110 points per game that season. Back in the early 80s. I mean, they got up and down the floor. The Lakers were Showtime, but the Jazz had a fast break, too, that was pretty tough. They put up a lot of points. They were fun to watch. I, like you, I was growing up young, and those are the first. That's the first Jazz team I remember was 83, 84, and the team with Hart and all those guys. And Thurl Bailey was part of the team, Rich Kelly. Just a great list. John Drew, great players, and a fun time. I always remember the image of Jim Nantz in the locker room interviewing the team after they had clinched the Midwest Division title. And they're all pouring champagne on Jim Nantz and everybody and Frank Layden. And such a great time because that team stunk so bad for so long. First 4 or 5 years, and for have that team finally get over. And he was an important part of that. He was an important part of the franchise being able to survive here and finally getting to the point where you got – it was kind of that bridge of the Stockton to Malone era where things really took off. But and where if it's not for players like Ricky Green and Daryl Griffith and Adrian Dantley – bringing fans to the games those early years and getting that team to playoff and help them become a winner, then they probably wouldn't be here tomorrow anymore.
Who's your number 4 point guard on the Utah Jazz list?
Ricky Green.
Okay.
Ricky Green was my number 4, and I just basically explained why I'd go with him. So who's your number 4?
My number 4 is actually a backup point guard. Again, maybe this is a fondness thing, but I'm going to go with Howard Eisley.
Yeah.
Was Howard Eisley a great point guard? No. Was he a good backup point guard? Yes. Could he have started for a lot of teams? I think so. I think Howard could have started a lot of teams, but he was the guy who just kind of came in and took the team over. He was not John Stockton. He was his own guy, but he was still fairly unselfish, and he helped run that Utah Jazz team, and he helped that team to 2 championships. Howard Eisley, one of the things I will say that I will always remember is that when Howard would come in the game and they would bring him in, what, with like 5 minutes left to go in the first quarter? That's usually when it was. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there. But they'd bring him in with 5 minutes to go left in the first quarter.
It was always the same time. It was like, because Sloan had his rotation.
Exactly.
With Stockton.
And he would come in, and I always knew, I thought, end of the quarter, Jazz are going to have the ball, and he's going to take the final shot. But the thing is, it was never a bad shot. You knew it was going to happen, and he was still taking the shot. Whether he made or missed, he always made the good play, but it was almost like he wanted to show Jerry Sloan, hey, I'm good too. I'm going to take this final shot. We're going to run this play for me. I'm going to take this final shot, and don't worry. We're going to be fine in doing this. So that's my memories of Howard Eisley. He was a good, solid point guard who did great things for the Jazz during those championship runs. Again, he was never going to beat out John Stockton, even at Stockton's mid-30s, just because Stockton was that great. But Howard was solid, and he helped this team out quite a bit.
I don't mind the Howard Eisley pick. He was a part of those 2 finals runs, and you know, who knows what he could have done in his prime on other teams. He was willing to play that role as a backup point guard and played it well for those Jazz teams. So you eliminated a couple of thoughts I had. I was thinking my initial is Mike Conley, because he hasn't played a second yet with the Jazz, and I would already put him on the top 5 list.
Come on.
Another guy that I would have considered had he played one more year at the Jazz was George Hill. I thought George Hill, in his 1 year with the Utah Jazz, had his best statistical year as an NBA player, and that's one I would consider. As I go back through time, John Crotty was one that was fun, who had a couple runs with the Jazz. I'm trying to think of some other guys. Like I loved Earl Watson was terrific. Devin Harris played a couple seasons with the Jazz and was really solid. But my number 5 is pretty clear and easy for me. It's Ricky Rubio.
We finally agreed on the second one. I put Ricky Rubio number 5 too.
Did you? Okay,
yeah, I did.
So we're there.
I did.
And you put Howard Eisley ahead of Ricky Rubio. Interesting.
Just probably because of longevity.
Okay.
That's where I would go. You know, Ricky was kind of the right guy for this team, and he was the wrong guy for this team in the same stance, because I'm still going to argue he needs to be around really good shooters.
Yeah.
And the Jazz just didn't have that. They didn't have the guys. And if you think about the thought process of it was going to be Ricky, it was going to be Joe, it was going to be Gordon Hayward. That seems like, when you think about that team and you're putting 2 good shooters around him and Gordon Hayward, who can take some pressure off of him by being able to take the ball every once in a while, I think that when you think of that, you're like, that's why they got Ricky Rubio, because they were going to put at least two really good shooters next to him, and he was going to be able to thrive going to the basket. No, he wasn't a great finisher, but he was going to be able to thrive going to the basket and finding guys open, whether that was around the basket or out on the perimeter. But that never materialized. We all love Donovan Mitchell, but Donovan still is streaky when it comes to shooting. So those two guys, it just didn't seem like they match up really well. Ricky, I think, needs shooters and stars on his team. He needs to be like, in a starting lineup, he needs to be like the fourth best player on his team, in my opinion. But he was a lot of fun. And not only that, he was a great ambassador off the court, too. And that's why I went with Ricky Rubio, number five.
No, it's an easy choice. I think Ricky needs to be on the top five here, and I agree with you. And the thing I'll say about Ricky Rubio is I just feel like he came in the NBA 10 years too late.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. His play was more suited for a different era of basketball. In the NBA, it's about the threes, and it was about getting to the rim. And those are the two weaknesses in his game. But as a playmaker and a passer and a guy in the mid-range and all the things that he did, plus the leadership and everything, if he played and if he entered the league in the year 2000, I mean, he could have had a Hall of Fame career. And he like you said, he wasn't probably wrong fit or, you know, wrong time or wrong era that he wouldn't be able to continue with his Jazz team, because he's not a 40% three-point shooter and he doesn't do all the things that you need in the NBA out of a point guard. But you know, even then, all that said, he was terrific in his 2 years. He was part of winning a playoff series last year. The year against Oklahoma City, he was terrific in that playoff series. He was a good matchup for him. And that's what I'm going to remember about. I'm going to remember that Oklahoma City playoff series. I'm going to remember him waving to the crowd in the playoffs and that great game he had. And I'm going to remember what he did off the court here. And he was terrific. And so, yeah, he's very deserving of the top five nod.
That's Jeremiah's top five point guards, my top five point guards. Let us know what you think. You can tweet at us. Thanks for listening to the Jazz Notes podcast. We are powered by KSL Sports. Coming up very shortly, we'll do the top five shooting guards of all time for the Utah Jazz. And I'm going to tap Sam Farnsworth to come in and join me on this one. So he'll join me and give me his top five Utah Jazz shooting guards of all time. That's going to be coming to you soon. Also, a preview of the Denver Nuggets. That's coming up soon on the Jazz Notes podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. Make sure you download, subscribe, listen to it on kslsports.com, or you can listen to it on Apple Podcasts. Thanks to Jeremiah again for coming in. He's really busy with football. What's football? Just kidding. I love football.
Oh, it's a good time of year.
All right.
And the Jazz are only 3 weeks away from starting camp, by the way.
Exactly. So we'll have a lot more when the Jazz start camp, too. Thanks a lot for listening to the Jazz Notes podcast. We'll be talking to you soon.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.